Today's daf in Erchin is Tesvav. We are on Yudalim and Beis. We're starting about a quarter of the way down Amar Rav Papa at the beginning of the line, before the line starts to start getting wider. The Gemara is going to continue its discussion regarding Stei Achuza versus Stei Mikna. As we pointed out yesterday, Stei Achuza is ancestral property, property you inherited from your father, and Stei Mikna is land that you purchased. There's no purchasing of land in Eretz Yisrael, as I explained yesterday. There's only leasing of land. In Yovel, it is going to return back to its owner. So we'll call it, the Torah calls it Stei Mikna, the Mishnah calls it Stei Mikna, call it lease property, it's all the same. There's no contradiction. There are basic halachic differences between the Stei Achuza and the Stei Mikna, and we learned it yesterday in the Mishnah, notably in terms of pigeon, in terms of redemption. If I'm makdish, if I sanctify, a person consecrates his Stei Achuza, so then in terms of redeeming it, so the Torah gives a fixed rate in terms of redemption, regardless of what its actual market value is. You're going to be redeeming it on a fixed value, as opposed to Stei Mikna when it comes to a lease property that you're a makdish. So obviously when you're makdish it, what it means really is you're being makdish to the lease. And so upon redemption, so you're going to be redeeming it at its actual value. That is the opinion of the Tanakam and the Mishnah. Now, there is a shita in the Mishnah of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that there is no such distinction in terms of its redemptive value. He feels that both of them are working at a fixed rate. That's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And later this morning, we're going to go and review the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer and source the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. That will be coming up in a couple of minutes from now. In the meantime, however, the shita of the Tanakam is very clear in the Mishnah. And so what we were discussing yesterday is some of the parameters of this halacha regarding the redemption rate. We spoke out yesterday the machlokes between Rav Huna and others. Rav Huna subscribes to the basic idea that when a person is makdish yidaso ba'an yafa, he's looking to create the greatest revenue towards the Beit HaMikdash. And so therefore when a person consecrates a field, and it's an ancestral field but it's got trees on it, so the Rav Huna's assumption is that the field was mukdash in one stage, and the trees were mukdash in another stage. And that means to say that when you redeem them, the field will be redeemed at the fixed rate, but the trees are going to be redeemed at its market value. That's the opinion of Rav Huna. There are those who disagree. In terms of Tanaim, we learned yesterday that Rabbi Shimon disagrees. He says that a person is makdish ba'ayin ra'a. He does so with a stingy eye. And so therefore he does not agree with Rav Huna. Now I know it's a machlokas between Rav Huna the Amara and Rabbi Shimon the Tana, but Rav Huna is just really representing Tanaitic viewpoints. And in other words, there are Tanaim who say that a person is makdish ba'ayin yafe. It's not just Rav Huna the Amara. So anyway, so that was the machlokas that we saw yesterday, and we finished that. The Gemara moves on now to a related topic, Amar of Papa. So we are now on top of the Amud. The Gemara makes the following statement. Rapapa makes the following statement. Hikdash Trashin. So let's say you're makdish a land. It's basically bedrock. It's not fertile soil. And so planting in such a land would be very difficult. So on one hand, it is property. On the other hand, it's not going to produce any yield. So how do we halachically view such a land? So Potem B'Shavyav, so Rapapa says that in terms of redemption, you're going to be redeeming it at its market rate and not going to be based on the fixed value. Why isn't it going to enjoy the halacha? A fixed value, my time, the Gemara goes on to explain. Because the redemption at fixed rate is based on the fact that the Torah says the word zera. In other words, you have to be able to plant in such a field, and in such a field you can't plant. Now, if you do not redeem it, so it's going to go to Yovel, and who is it going to go to Yovel? It's going to go to the Kohanim. Now, this is a halacha which we have not gone over yesterday, so let's quickly go over it now. And we're going to see a lot of this in the end of the Masechta. The Gemara is going to spend a considerable amount of time discussing this. If I makdish an ancestral field and I am not redeeming it, Yovel occurs, and that means that the field is not going to come back to me, but rather it's going to go to the Kohanim. It's an unusual transfer of ownership. But nevertheless, so that's the halacha. Halacha is mefureshes b'Torah, that it goes to the Kohanim in the Yovel year, as opposed to if a person is makdish a Stei Mikna, a lease property, so then it does not go to the Kohanim in Yovel, but rather it returns back to the owner. But if a person is makdish his own field, his own ancestral property, and failure of redemption means that it's going to go to the Kohanim. So basically what Rav Papa is doing with our bedrock land, our bedrock real estate, where you can't really plant on it. On the other hand, he says it will go to the Kohanim. So basically, he's doing a kind of a kind of compromised position regarding how to halakhically view this land. On one hand, it's not producing yield, so therefore the redemption rate is not going to be worked with the fixed value, but rather on its actual market value. On the other hand, it is going to go to the Kohanim and the Yovel. And the question is why? Well, in other words, why are we not giving a consistent viewpoint regarding these halachas? So that's the Gemara's question. My time is, Sad Amar Rechmana Kol Dehu. Because in terms of the land going to the Kohanim, the Torah just simply describes it as a Sada. It doesn't have to produce yield in order for it to go to the Kohanim. It just simply has to be property. It just has to be a Sada field. And so therefore, the halachas are going to be different. In terms of redemptive rate, because it doesn't produce, it doesn't give us a yield, so therefore it's going to go at it's going to be have to redeem that market value, not fixed rate. But because it is a Sada, so therefore it goes to the Kohanim. Machar Trishin. Now what if I sell this property that is really rocky property and does not have a harvest? So Nigam Pachas Mishtei Shanim, so therefore I could redeem it within 2 years. Now this is another halacha which we have not gone over yet. And again, these halachas will be explained in much greater detail later on. I'm just going to mention it now quickly. And that is that when I sell a property, again, sale in Eretz Yisrael really means lease. But when I sell a property in Eretz Yisrael, I can buy it back from the lessee, from the one who leased it from me, but I have to give him a minimum of 2 years with it. Based on Psukim in the Torah, the idea that I can't buy it back, I can't redeem it from him until minimum of 2 years. So this shteishanim, this minimum of 2 years, only is a land that you could harvest. And so what we're learning together is that if it's a land that I cannot harvest and a person leased it, so then I can buy it back within 2 years. My time out. And the Gemara goes on to explain, Mispar Shnei Tvuos Amar Rachmana. V'hai Lav B'nei Tvuos Ninunu. Because this 2 year minimum is based on the fact that the land could be harvested. Being that this particular land cannot be harvested, so therefore I can buy it back within 2 years. Lo Ga'alan Choseros L'Balam B'Yovo. Now, if I don't end up redeeming it, so where's it going to go in the Yovel year? Now, mind you, by the way, this is not consecrated property. This is just simply sold property. So what happens to sold property? We all know it comes back to the owner in Yovel. This land, even though it's not harvestable, nevertheless, it's going to go back to the owner in the Yovel year. My time of Ishav L'Achuzah So Amar Rechmana V'Hainami Achuzahi. Because in terms of going back to its original owner, there's only one criteria, Achuzah. As long as it's ancestral property, and as long as I sold it, it's going to come back to me in Yovel, period. Hikdash Ulanos. Okay, we're going to do now the same thing. In other words, we're going to go through the same series of halachas. Previously, we talked about land, which is not fertile land, and they just simply can't plant it. So now we're going to do the same thing, but now we're going to discuss trees and the relationship between trees and the property that lies underneath it. So Hikdash Ulanos, so let's say I'm not just trees. Now, again, as I mentioned yesterday, trees are going to have a hard time functioning without the land underneath it. I think we all get it. On the other hand, however, halachically, the status of trees is that it is viewed independent of the property. Now, in just a moment, the Gemara is going to kind of push back on that, but that's the Gemara's thinking right now. The trees, even though obviously they need the land, they're viewed as separate entities. So hikdashulano. So let's say I was makdish just the trees. So poda b'shaviyam. So when I redeem them, I have to redeem them at their market value. So my time of bezera amar rechmana v'lo ilanus, because the Torah says that in terms of the only thing that is going to be redeemed at a fixed rate is going to be the land, but not the trees. Now, if I don't redeem them, and again, remember, now we're talking about being makdish them, consecrating them. So what happens in the Yovel year to trees? So they don't go to the Kohanim. Unlike property, which does go to the Kohanim, these trees do not go to the Kohanim. So because again, the things that go to the Kohanim in the Yovel year are only properties that are mukdash. This is not a property. This is a tree. And so therefore, it does not go to the Kohanim. Machar Ilanos. Now, what if I sell trees? So, in Nigalan Pachos Mishtei Shanim. So here, I can't redeem them within 2 years, meaning the trees do have a 2 year minimum waiting period before I get to redeem them back. My time is Shnei Tvuos, Amar Rechmana V'Hani B'nei Tvuos Ninu. Because in terms of the 2 year minimum, it's based on Tvuot. It's based on the harvest, on the yield. And obviously, the tree is going to produce yield. So lo ga'alan ein choseres labalim b'yovel. Now, if I don't redeem them, they're not going to come back to me in the Yovel year. Now, why not? My time of v'shav l'achuz asam rechmana v'lo ilanos. Because again, in order for it to go back to the owner, it has to be an achuz, that has to be a property, an ancestral property. Trees are not considered a property. Now, amar marhikdash ilanos pod b'shav yamamai v'liktashu agav arayhu v'lifriku agav arayhu. Now, the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. When a person was makdish the trees, doesn't that mean that the land is going to come automatically with the trees? Isn't it trees and land coming together? So v'chi teima ilanos ikdish aralo ikdish. Now the Gemara says, okay, well, maybe you'll make the argument that the person was only makdish the trees but not the land underneath. V'amri naradai. Now the Gemara says, now we have to take into consideration that which was said over in the yeshiva of Narada, which is manda zavin le dikla lechavre kana le mishipula v'atahoma. So the Gemara says that when a person sells a tree to his friend, so incorporated, included in the sale of a tree, is going to be the land underneath. How far down? It keeps going. Meaning, so the Gemara's assumption is that a default transaction of a tree includes the land underneath it. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. Our discussion that we had for the last 5 minutes is assuming that there's such a thing as trees existing independent of the land underneath. Meanwhile, the Pesach of Narada seems to be pretty clear that that's not true. A sale of a tree includes the land underneath. So now that we have a tree, we can't look at the tree independent of the land underneath. So the Gemara says, not so fast. La mi itmar ala beva machmas taina. The Gemara says, no. That statement of the Narada, of the yeshiva of Narada, that's only talking about where the claim was specifically you outline tree and the land underneath. Meaning, no. A generic transaction of a tree is only the tree and not the land underneath. The Gemara Baba Basra, the statement of Nahardai, that's only talking about where there was a clause, or at least a claim, that the clause in the contract said tree and the land underneath. Otherwise, a default setting of a transaction of a tree is going to be only the tree and not the land underneath, and the Gemara basically supports everything we just stated. So the Mikneh Nosen Shav Yav. Now, if I have a stay Mikneh, if I have a field that is a leased field and I want to redeem it, I redeem it at market value. That's what we learned in our Mishnah. Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara now is going to be quoting the Psukim. All the Psukim here are going to be Psukim located in Parshas Bahar regarding the redemption of a field. The Pasuk says, Memechsas, Maba Lamo Lefish Nemer, Zerah Chomer Sarim, Bechamishim Shekel Kesef. So the Torah says that when you're redeeming a consecrated field, you're redeeming it at a fixed rate. Yachol afs de mikneh kain. I might have thought the same thing should be true, regardless of whether or not I was makdish a ancestral field, a stei achuza, or a stei mikneh. So tamalom mechsas. So the Torah says the word mechsas in describing the stei mikneh. Mechsas means the sum. The sum of its value. The sum of its value meaning not its fixed rate, but rather its market value. Now, that is the opinion of the Tanakhama, which we are now explaining. It's based on the way the Torah describes the ancestral field versus the way the Torah describes the leased field. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Now, Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. Now, we already know that because we saw that in the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer says that in terms of its redemptive rate, there's no difference between an ancestral field and a stei mikneh and a leased field. They're both going to be redeemed at the fixed rate. So Rabbi Elazar Amar Nemar Kan V'Chishev and Nemar Lalan V'Chishev Ma Lahalan Davar Chatzuf Av Kan Davar Chatzuf. As far as Rabbi Elazar is concerned, Gzeira Shava. The Torah uses the words V'Chishav in both circumstances. The Gzeira Shava links the two together, and as a result of that, because of the Gzeira Shava, so that means just like it's a fixed rate of redemption with the ancestral field that the pasuk says clearly, we're going to assume the same thing is true regarding a leased field as well, stei mikneh. What does he do with the pasuk of v'chishav? So for that, he learns other halachas, but in other words, but not this, not the rate of redemption. Ibailuhu rabbanan islu gzeira shava. So the Gemara now asks the following question: do the chachamim one possibility is they hold the gzeira shava and they're learning it for a different halacha, or the other possibility is they don't hold the gzeira shava as well. Meaning, Rabbi Elazar holds there's a gzeira shava. The chachamim right now, the Gemara is poking, the Gemara is prodding. Where do the Chacham feel about Gzeira Shava? Now, we all know that when it comes to Gzeira Shava, you don't manufacture Gzeira Shava. You have Gzeira Shava as a Kabbalah, as a tradition, as a Mesorah. And clearly, Rabbi Eliezer had such a Gzeira Shava. Now, I know it always gets strange whenever we talk about a Machlokas about Gzeira Shava. And do other Tanaim not subscribe to the Gzeira Shava? It's not a Machlokas in Svara. They're not arguing about rationale and reasoning. They're arguing about whether or not they have the Mesorah or they don't have the Mesorah. I know that's unusual, but we do find this pretty often throughout Shas. And so, Ibailu, Rabban Islu Gzeira Shava. So one possibility is that the Chachamim agree to the Gzeira Shava of V'chishav. Umafkin Leil Chomish. And what they learn from here is the Halach of Chomish. If the owner is going to be redeeming his own property, So he not only is going to have to be paying the rate, the fixed rate, but he's going to also have to add chomish as well, a fifth, which, as we all know, is really a fourth. Or maybe no. Maybe he does not subscribe to any such gzeira shava, and he's not subscribing at all to the concept of chomish as it relates to redeeming his ancestral property. So the Gemara says that the easiest way to say it, or the most rational way to say it, is that the Chachamim do not subscribe to gzeira shava. Why? Because the Torah does mention chomish, but the Torah mentions chomish specifically by steachuza. And when a person is makdish his home, in these circumstances, the Torah says that if the owner is going to redeem it, he's going to be redeeming it, adding the chomish. So what do we have over here? Multiple times that the Torah introduces us to the idea of when the owner is redeeming, he adds a chomish. Now, if it's multiple times, this is what the concept of shnei ksuvim habayim ke'echad. Two psukim teaching us the same point. And the general idea is, and we see this throughout Shas, is that when the Torah is making this point more than once, it means this is not the rule, but rather these are the exceptions. So since the Torah tells us this halacha by sadeh and by bias, that when the owner is redeeming it, he's got to add on a chomish, that means in other areas of halacha, he does not add on the chomish. Now the Gemara always does this, meaning whenever we have the idea of shnei ksuvim, there are some tanaim who are of the opinion that even shnei ksuvim is setting a rule, not an exception. So the Gemara says, okay, I can even go with that opinion, midigal rechmana, chomish b'maiser behema tohoru, So the Gemara says this idea that the owner is going to be adding a chomesh is not just recorded once, not even twice in the Torah. It's recorded many times in the Torah. If a person is going to be redeeming his behemah tahorah, if a person is going to be redeeming his behemah tameah, the Torah says if it's the owner, he's got to pay a chomesh. So this idea that the owner pays a chomesh, the Torah says it goes over it many times. And now if you want to tell me that there's a gzeira shava giving us another time, it's not reasonable. Meaning, by virtue of the fact that the Torah says it so many times, it means that the Torah is going through the effort and energy to tell us these are the times where the owner is going to be adding a surcharge of 25%. And other areas, we assume no. Even if I have a gzera shava, that would introduce us to another area. Tanya kavasi de Rava v'lo ketami. Now the Gemara quotes a braisa that is going to support the conclusion of Rava, but not based on his argument. Detanya b'mechsas erkecha hikishu akatzvul erchin. My erchin a mosif. Chomish av stay mikna in mosif chomish. So here in the braisa, stay mikna. Owner wants to redeem it. He's not going to be adding a chomish. Now, up until now, what was the argument of Rava? The argument of Rava is because the Torah doesn't say so. And so by virtue of the fact that the Torah doesn't say so, so therefore we're not going to introduce chomish. That was Rava's argument. The braisa over here actually gives us a different argument. Same conclusion, but different argument. If the owner is going to be redeeming his stay mikna, so he does not add a chumash. Why? Because of the linkage between stay mikna and erchin. Just like erchin, there is no chumash. Now, obviously, there's no chumash by erchin, because by erchin, that is a fixed amount. The Torah says exactly how much to pay. There's no surcharge on erchin. So, too, by pigeon stay mikna, when you're redeeming, even if it's the owner redeeming his stay mikna, so there's not going to be a surcharge as well. So it's a limud that gets us to this conclusion, and it's not just simply that the Torah doesn't mention it, but it's an actual limud that gets us to this point. Adkan, that brings us to the end of the Gemara's discussion regarding Stei Mikna and Stei Achuza. Do not worry, the Gemara is going to be coming back to this topic a lot. This is the Masechta that talks about Stei Mikna and Stei Achuza. When we get to the later Prakim of Erechim, we're going to return back to this topic, and we're going to be discussing it again. So this is not it. Shor HaMuad, we are now going to be touching on the topic of Shor HaMuad. We're still on Yudal Amud Beis, and the Mishnah, once again, making the same point that it made in the heading of this parak. The heading of the parak is that because in certain areas in Halacha there is a fixed rate, so sometimes it represents a kula, sometimes it represents a chumra, because we do not look at its market value, his or her market value, but rather because it's a fixed rate, so sometimes it could represent a leniency, because really his market value is significantly more, the Torah only says pay this much, or sometimes it could represent a chumra, because maybe his value is significantly less, and the Torah says pay this much. So whenever dealing with fixed values of compensation, so therefore it sometimes could be a kula and sometimes a chumra. We are now discussing the topic of Shur HaMuad. If my Shur HaMuad were to kill an Eved Kenani, my Shur HaMuad killing somebody else's Eved Kenani, so therefore I have to pay the owner of the Eved Kenani 30 shkalim, 30 salim. So lahakel lachmir ketzad echesh emitzanah shebavadim v'esakor shebavadim mosim shloshim salim, shloshim salim. So, and again, the explanation is all going to be the same. Because sometimes my Shur HaMuad can kill some an Eved Kenani that's valued more. And for me, now it's a kula. I only have to pay 30 salim. Sometimes my Shur HaMuad can kill an Eved Kenani that's less. And for that, it would be a chumra now. Hemiz ben Chorin, no Sein Shavyav. Now, if my Shur HaMuad were to kill a ben Chorin, so then no Sein Shavyav, I pay its value. This is now talking about the concept of kofir. This is introduced to us in Parshas Mishpatim, where in Parshas Mishpatim, if I have a Shur HaMuad, an ox that's Gordon killed now three times, so now if it kills a person, not an Eved Kenani, but a free person, so if it kills a person, so now the Torah says, I'm subject to the death penalty. But this death penalty is not like other death penalties in the Torah. By other death penalties in the Torah, that's it, meaning it's the death penalty, and there's no way getting out of it. This is one of the unusual circumstances in the Torah where there's a death penalty, but you can pay your way out of it. That payment that's paying you out of your death penalty, so the Torah describes it as kofir. Kofir is kind of like ransom, meaning it is an allowance. It is a one-time allowance in the Torah where you can pay your way out of it. How do you pay your way out of it? By paying the value of the victim. So that's kofir. So when it comes to this payment of kofir, so here it actually is going to be reflective of market value. So no Sein Shavyav. Good. So that's the point of the Mishnah. As opposed to Eved Kenani, which is a fixed value, and so therefore it could sometimes be a kula nechumra, when you're paying kofir, it's going to be market value. Chava b'zeh v'zeh nasan nezek shalem. Now, if it does chavala, if the animal does damages, so then you pay nezek shalom, you pay full damages. Now, b'muad in b'tamlo, lema masis in the lok Rabbi Akiva. Now, the Gemara says, is our Mishnah weighing in on the following debate? The debate in Baba Kama goes like this. Let's say I have a short tom. It has not done damage before. Generally speaking, these are docile animals. They're not going to be doing damage. And so, therefore, the damage that it does originally, the first time, even the second and third, so that is considered a tom, a short tom. Now, we all know the halacha, short time does damage, you pay chatzi nezik, you pay half damages. You don't pay full damages. But that's when my short time does damage to property. What if my short time does damages to another person? Bodily damage. So is it there as well going to be chatzi nezik, or bodily damage is different and you pay nezik shalem? What is that? A machlokas and baba kama. The Gemara in Baba Kama is a machlokas tanaim whether or not if my short time does bodily damage to another person, so am I going to be paying chatzi nezek or nezek shalem? Machlokas. So the Gemara says, is our Mishnah here, even though it's tucked away in Erechin, is our Mishnah here going to be taking a stand on that debate? And the Gemara says no, not necessarily. So Lema, the Gemara suggesting Masis in the local Rabbi Akiva, did not Rabbi Akiva Amar Aftam Shechava Ba Adam Mishalem Be Moser Nezek Shalem. Now Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that when a short time does damage to a person, it's full damages. And maybe our Mishnah is not subscribing to that. Because our Mishnah says only when it's a muad does it pay full damages. The Gemara says, no, afilu tam Rabbi Akiva. Hu adin afilu tam nami. So the Gemara says, our Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Akiva. If our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva, why does our Mishnah talk about muad? Well, it's very simple. I did the kabbai limitsa seifa, hemis evet, hemis ben chorin, de bemuad, hu de mishkachala, betamla mishkachala, misham hachi kitani muad. Because the other halachas in our Mishnah are exclusive only to muad. The halach of kofir, that's only by muad. The halacha of shloshim slain by an Eved Kenani, that's only by muad. So therefore, since the other halachas of our Mishnah are only exclusively by a shor muad and not by shor tam, so therefore, even as the Mishnah introduces chavala damages, it's talking muad, not tam. But not because there's a difference, just simply because of the preferred symmetry of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah wants to keep everything nice and symmetrical, even though it's by chavala, there may not be a difference between Tom versus Muad, as is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Next Mishnah, bonus mefatel hakol lahachmir ketzad echesh anasu pita as gedola shekohanim shebekohanim v'esa katana shebeyisrael no sin chamishim slayim. Now for rape. Rape is assault. right? In halacha, I'm speaking halacha right now, not giving any kind of legal opinion on the matter. We're not speaking legalities over here. I'm just speaking specifically from the Torah standpoint. So in terms of rape in the Torah, so it's assault, and so therefore when one person assaults another person, so you pay all the damages as per the Mishnayos in the 8th paragraph of Baba Kama. On top of that, there is also a kanas. In other words, it's also a monetary penalty that is on top of that, which is 50 selaim. So over here, when the Gemara is talking, the Mishnah is just talking about the kanas, meaning for the actual bodily damages. So it's going to play out like any kind of bodily damage, where you're going to be looking at the depreciated value of the victim. That's going to be the nezek, or we're going to be using a word here in our Mishnah called pigam. There's also boshes, there's sa'ar, there's ripui, et cetera, meaning for the actual monetary payments of assault, of bodily damage, you're going to be working with the standard rules as per the Gemara Baba Kama in the 8th Perek. We're discussing right now just the kanas, and the Mishnah is going to make that point very clear. I know I'm saying it like to clarify. The Mishnah is going to also be very clear about this point. And vis-a-vis the kanas, that's exactly the point. The kanas is set at 50 shkalim. It's always going to be 50 shkalim, regardless of who the victim is. So that means to say that if a person's mefate, now I'm sorry, by the way, just to be clear also, onus is rape, pitui is seduction. There are differences, sorry about the grammar. There are differences between onus mefate halachically. The third parak of Ksuvos goes over this in detail. For our purposes right now, I'm going to abbreviate, so I'm not going to go through them. There are differences, but right now, vis-a-vis the kanas, there's no difference. It's the same point. So, if a person were to rape or seduce a gedolah shebekahuna, a woman who is a real prestige, she comes from Kohen family, v'sektan shebisrael, or somebody who does not have that much prestige. So, nosni chamishim slime. So you pay 50 slime for the kanas. Now the Mishnah clarifies. Haboshes v'abagama kol lefi amivayish v'amitbayish. Now as far as the actual for the payment of embarrassment, for the payment of begam, these are part of the regular bodily damages. Now by the way, the Mishnah in Baba Kama, the 8th paragraph, goes over 5 different types of bodily damages. Right, nezek, tsar, boshes, begam, and ripui. So over here, I know the Mishnah only mentions 2 of them. Why doesn't the Mishnah mention all 5? It's a worthwhile discussion. I'm just abbreviating right now. But the point is very simple. For the standard bodily damages, it's going to not be a fixed rate. It's going to be whatever the assessment is. What is going to be standard is going to be the 50 shkalim. Now, the Gemara over here, it's the same discussion that the Gemara in Ksuvos has. The Gemara is exploring the idea that maybe the 50 shkalim is a payment for everything. That includes everything. And the Gemara is basically going to say no. And just it's only a question of how you articulate why that's the case. Why the 50 does not include everything. The 50 is just a separate kanas. Maybe the 50 slime is for everything. So the Gemara is going to try to reject this argument on a couple of bases. So the first suggestion of Rav Ze'iri is, well, what are you going to say? The daughter of a prince is going to be 50. The daughter of a commoner is going to be 50. Amalei Abayi, Hachi Gabi Eved Nami, Yomer Eved, No Kev Margolio Shloshim, Eved Osei Maise Machat Shloshim. To which Abayi says, well, isn't that always going to be the case with a kanas? Meaning, what kind of argument is that? In other words, if fixed kanas is going to be a fixed kanas. If my Shor Amud were to kill an Eved that is worth a lot, he's a skilled worker, or versus my Eved killing an Eved that really can't do a whole lot, it's 30 slime, because that's the fixed rate. In other words, basically Abayi says, don't you understand what fixed rate means? Fixed rate means fixed rate. And then it really is difficult to understand what was the suggestion of Ze'iri. But anyway, Ela Amar of Ze'iri, so the Gemara now goes over a second attempt of how we're going to articulate this. Now over here, the Gemara is going to be a little bit graphic, apologies, but the Gemara over here talks about a woman who was violated twice. The first time she was violated was unnaturally, and then the second time she's violated naturally. Now even though in halacha, an unnatural violation, or for that matter, a natural cohabitation is considered bia, it's considered an act of bia, but nevertheless, vis-a-vis the kanas, the Torah is very clear. the knas payment is going to be for rendering her no longer a besulim. And so therefore, she's violated once, she's violated a second time. But because the first time she was violated, her besulim was not ruptured. In the second time she was violated, the besulim is ruptured. So that means that the second person who is now victimizing her is going to be paying the knas, even though she's already been violated. And so the Gemara says, Yom Rabal Paguma Chamishim Bal Shlema Chamishim. And now, these two, this woman who is now already a violated woman, she is a Bal Paguma. Her value has already, to a certain degree, been depreciated. And so therefore, for her, the kanas is going to be 50. And meanwhile, for a woman who has not experienced any kind of depreciation already, so she's going to be 50 as well. Amar le Abaye hachi gabi eved nami. Yomar eved bari shloshim, eved mukashkin shloshim. And so again, Abaye's responses over here is basically going to be the same. Don't you understand what fixed value means? If my shur hamuad were to kill an eved kanani, it does not matter if the eved kanani is fit in the best health or if my eved kanani is going to be in the worst condition in the world. A fixed value, a knas, is going to be exactly that. It's a knas. So too over here, why don't we say the same thing? It's just simply a knas, and maybe it does incorporate everything. So Ella Amar Abaye. So after a couple of tries of Zeir, and Abaye rejects both of them, so Abaye himself now is going to give his explanation. Amar Kra Tachas Asher Ina. The kanas the Torah describes is tachas asherina, in substitution for, in exchange for the fact that he was ma'ane her. He tormented her. He caused her anguish. Mechal de'ika boshes pagam. So implicit in that is that the kanas is just for that, but does not cover the other standard bodily damage payments. That's one possibility. Rava Amar Damar Krav, and Osein Aisha Shochev Ima, Hanashchiva Chamisha Michal De'ika Milsa Achrisa, Umayni Uboshu Zabagam. Rava says it a little bit differently. Rava, the way Rava explains it is that the Torah says that the Chamishim Shekel is not for any suffering that she received, but rather for the benefit, for the pleasure that he received in doing so. So in other words, the 50 is for that, but then on top of all that, you obviously have to account for all the bodily damages that she suffered. And so therefore the boshes, the pagam, etc., etc. So that is not included in the chamishim shekel. Okay, the conclusion everyone agrees to, which is simply a question of how to get to that conclusion. The chamishim shekel that a man pays a woman in the cases of either ones or mefateh is just that. It's the kanas. It's the fixed penalty that he pays. On top of that, also you have to take into consideration all the bodily damages that he has to pay her on top of that as well, which is not a fixed rate, but it's going to be based on the pagam is our market value, the boshes is going to be assessed by the court, but it's going to be adjusted to what it actually represents, its market value, and not a fixed rate. Okay, motzi shemra. And from here now, for the rest of the daf today, we're going to be discussing defamation of character. We have another word that describes it, which is lashon hara. And for the next 2 days, we're going to be treated to really fantastic gemaras that detail and outline the laws of lashon hara. We are only 1 week behind in terms of the Parshios, in Eretz Yisrael, 2 weeks behind, but we just finished Parsha Shlach. We will be discussing in detail the Parsha of Shlach as it relates to Lashon Hara, also the end of Parshas Baaloscha, also details the halachas of Lashon Hara, and our Mishnah as well. Now, our Mishnah over here is going to be talking about Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra is actually a very specific scenario. A man marries a woman, and after the first night of marriage, makes the following accusation. She claimed before marriage that she was a besula, that she was a virgin. And meanwhile, I'm telling you, she was not. And so now he goes to court and he takes her to court and says that I married her under the premise that she was a besula, and it turns out that she was not a besula. So under those circumstances, if in fact he's proven to have made a false report about her, right? This is Lashon Hara. Now, it's actually, if I'm going to be more specific, it's not Lashon Hara. It's Motzi Shemra, meaning this is a defamation of character. It's not true what he's saying. And we'll go over later the differences, the fine differences between Motzi Shemra versus Lashon Hara, etc. That's going to all come up. But in other words, this is Motzi Shemra, it's defamation of character. Under those circumstances, the Torah says that the man has to pay the victim. Now, the victim over here, meaning his wife, by the way. He's going to have to pay her 100 shkalim. This is, in the Torah, the largest fine given out in the Torah. Meaning, for rape and seduction, the fine is 50. For the killing of an eved kanani by a shur hamuad, the fine is going to be 30 shkalim. So we see, in other words, if we could just gauge based on other fines in the Torah, So we're talking about 30 slaim. We're talking about 50 shkalim. Slaim, by the way, slaim shkalim are interchangeable. I don't mean to confuse. Just give me a moment. We're talking here now about 100 shkalim. So just to wrap our heads around the magnitude of such a fine under such case. Yes.
So he's putting money from his left hand and giving it to his right.
No. In other words, yes and no. Right. In other words, it's going to be her money. He will have certain benefits from that money. In other words, he'll get the payros of that money. The dividends will go to him. But in other words, but the money's her. The money will be put in some form of a property. That property belongs to her, and so it's he will be getting the dividends of it. So v'motzi shemer la'akel lachem keitzad echad shehotzi shemer al gadol shebekohen v'al katan shebisrael v'nasa me'asa sela nimsa ha'omer b'fiv chamer minaosa ma'isa. Now the Mishnah itself makes this observation of the magnitude of the kenas shekein matzina shel. I'm sorry that and the Gemara says and consider now. Sorry, they say the Gemara. The Mishnah says now consider how harsh it is that your speech is going to be twice as much as an action. For an action, like we just described in the previous Mishnah of Onis and Mefata, it's going to be 50 slime. And over here now, for speech and defamation of character, it's going to be 100. She came out, Sinishala Neschatem, Gazar Dinalva, Sinabe, Midbar, Ella, Alash, and Hara. And the Mishnah says, and I'll tell you, I'll give you another piece of evidence that speech and speech that's maligning somebody is going to be so severe. You know that the Jews did really a lot of offensive things in the desert. And I'm sorry for saying, right, what a hypocrite I am. In the Gemara now is talking about defaming somebody, and now I'm speaking about this way about B'nai Yisrael. But I'm reporting what the Mishnah is telling us and what's recorded in the Torah. But in other words, I guess it's just a question of sensitivity. And I'm just trying to make myself slightly more sensitive to this idea. So anyway, so the Jews engaged in really poor behavior in the Midbar, and meanwhile, when did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, okay, that's it, enough already, you people are not going to Eretz Yisrael? That was for the Lashon Hara. So Ela Lashon Hara, Shenem Rav Yanesu sees Eser Pamim. And you go back to last week's Parsha, to Parsha Shlach, and you'll remember over there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, you know, they tested me 10 times. But the truth of the matter is, that's fine. I mean, the 10 times would have been fine. But this, in other words, the motzi shemer, the defamation of Eretz Yisrael, like this is it. Like we've hit the end. And so you see the severity of Lashon Hara. And now, mimai dama mishum dekagarim le'ketala dechziv et avim emes hayadavar. Now the Gemara says, now maybe by motzi shemer, we're going back to the beginning of the Mishnah, motzi shemer, maybe it has to do with the fact that, look, what if in fact he's telling the truth? Meaning, let's just for a moment consider. He said that his wife is not a Basulim. Now, let's say he's telling the truth. Now, what would be the result of that? Well, remember, now they've been married for a year. This is now, they've entered the second stage of marriage, which is Nisuin. Traditionally, a year passes between Kedushin and Nisuin. So let's say she did, in fact, have relations with another man. And let's say, in fact, she had relations with another man during that year of Kedushin. That makes her a Noephis. She's now an adulteress under those circumstances. And again, we don't conjecture. Obviously, I'm making an obvious point. So you need Adam, you need witnesses coming forward and all testifying to this. But if what he's saying is correct, and it's supported by witnesses, she's going to be put to death. Well, the Gemara now is countering, the Gemara is pushing back on the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, you could see the severity of Motzi Shemra, defamation character. The Gemara says, maybe not. Meaning, maybe all this is a function of how serious this is. Because if, in fact, he's telling the truth, she's going to be put to death. So the Rava says, no, a careful reading of the Pesukim would indicate that the 100 shkalim that he pays her is not because of the severe, meaning it is a severe accusation. And yes, everything we said is true. And if he's telling the truth, then she's going to be put to death. However, the 100 shkalim is for the Motzi Shemra. It is, if you read the Pesukim carefully, it's clear that the fine is for his defamation of her character. Again, now the Gemara is pushing back on the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, I'm going to show you how bad Motzi Shemra, defamation of character, is, because look what happened to the Jews in the desert. They start maligning Eretz Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, enough. And you see how severe it is. The Gemara pushes back. The Gemara just simply says, you know what? Maybe the maligning of Eretz Yisrael is bad, but maybe not as bad as what you're suggesting. Maybe it just happens to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain amount of patience. Now I know, I'm giving human characteristics to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but that's just so we can have a conversation. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain amount of patience, and basically, it's the, to use the proverbial, it's the straw that broke the camel's back. But it's just a straw. Meaning, the defamation of Eretz Yisrael is not any more severe than anything else, it's just HaKadosh Baruch Hu is basically saying, I had enough. But it doesn't reflect how severe Lashon Hara is. Amar Rav HaMenuna, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu nifra min ha'adam ad shetizma le'sa'aso. In fact, we have such a tradition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain amount of tolerance and patience, and at that point in time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, ma le'sa'aso, the measure's been filled, okay. She'nem rabim la'aso, sepeiko yatzar lo. Gemara quotes the pasuk in Iyov speaking to this idea. So the Gemara says, Amar Ish Lakish ha'makrav yinasu osi ze eser pamim va'al zen ischatem gzar din. So Reish Lakish says no. Meaning, yes, everything you said is correct. And there is an idea in halacha of the straw that breaks the camel's back. But that's all true. But over here, however, once again, a careful reading of the psukim would indicate that the defamation of character is not just the straw that broke the camel's back, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu's gzar din is specifically over the Lashon Hara. It says the word zeh. Over this event, this is it, meaning this Lashon Hara is the reason why Bnei Yisrael are not going into Eretz Yisrael. Tanya Amar Rav Elazar ben Prata bo rei kamagado koach shel Lashon Hara minalim mimeraglim. So the Gemara over here now is going to give us studies and lessons and mussar regarding how significant and how important it is not to speak Lashon Hara. So the Gemara says, let's take a lesson from the meraglim. Maha motzi shemra al eitzim vavanim, kacha motzi shemra al chavera al achas kama vichama. So the Gemara says, look, when it comes to the Lashon Hara that was spoken by the Meraglim, they were speaking Lashon Hara about people? No, they were speaking Lashon Hara about rocks and wood, meaning a land, an inanimate item. And meanwhile, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, that's it. Bnei Yisrael not going in. Imagine now if you're speaking Lashon Hara about a person. The Gemara now is pushing back on this. The Gemara says, well, maybe it goes like this. Maybe the punishment for the Lashon Hara of the Meraglim is not just because of Lashon Hara, but maybe there was something that was much worse than just the Lashon Hara. Maybe it has to do with the fact that when the Meraglim were speaking, they were saying things that were blasphemous. For example, the Pasuk says, Ki chazak hu mimenu. Now, they are too strong for us. Meaning, the simple reading of the Pasuk is, they're referring to the Kananim. However, there is a different way to understand the pasuk. Al tikre chazak hu mimenu, al chazak hu mimenu. Now, usually when we say the words al tikre, it means that we're changing the word of the pasuk. Over here, we're not. We're keeping the pasuk as it is. There's a different way to understand the word mimenu. Mimenu could mean from them. Mimenu could also mean from him. Same meaning from different meanings from the same word. And when we say him, capital H, meaning maybe what they were suggesting is that the Kananim are too strong for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Blasphemy. Kaviyachol balabais en yachol asik kelev misham. The owner can't take his utensils out of his own home. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just simply does not have the ability to take all the Kananim and remove them from Canaan so that we can get Eretz Yisrael. And what they were challenging was the ability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, so what the Gemara now is suggesting is it's not just Lashon Hara, but it's also the blasphemy that comes along with it. So, Ela Amar Rabba Amar Ish Lakish Amar Krav V'yamusu Anashim Otsi Dibas Ha'aretz Ra'a. So, the Gemara says, no. It happens to be that we know the punishment is coming specifically for the Lashon Hara. A careful reading of the Pasuk would seem to indicate. They died because of the Dibas Ha'aretz Ra'a. Al Dibas Ha'aretz Shehotziu. Their death, the Meraglim died immediately, and by the way, horrifically. We'll cover that a little bit later on. And so they died because of the speech that came out of their mouth. It's not because of their accusations regarding HaKadosh Baruch Hu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's quote-unquote limited capabilities, but because of their bad speech, because of their maligning Eretz Yisrael. Tanya Amar Rav Yehuda Eser Nisyonis Nisu Avasin HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There were a total of 10 tests that the Jewish people tested. Bnei Yisrael tested Kadosh Baruch Hu in the desert. Shnayim b'yam, 2 times in the sea. Shnayim b'mayim, 2 times regarding water. Shnaim b'man, two times regarding the man, and shnaim b'slav, two times with the slav. Achas be'egel v'achas b'midbar paran. Once regarding the eagle and another time regarding the sending of the meraglim. Okay, and we're going to go through all 10 of these events. Shnaim b'yam, achas b'yudah v'achas b'aliyah. The two times that we tested HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the Yamsuf. One, pretty clear. When we go in, or right before we went in. B'yirida d'chziv ha'mibli ein kvarim b'mitzrayim. So before going in, so we turned to Moshe / HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we said to them, you know, you don't think there were enough graves in Egypt? Meaning this is where we got to die? Okay, so that was our testing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu the first time by Yamsuf. What about the second time? So ba'ali k'drav huna damar rav huna Yisrael sheba'oso ador mekanei emuna hayu. So Rav Huna says that Bnei Yisrael and that generation were of limited faith. Kidarabba Barmari, Dama Rabba Barmari, my Dechsib, we quote the Pasuk in Tehillim. Vayimaru al Yamsuf, bi Yamsuf, Vyoshiem Laman Shemo. That we rebelled against him. Now, if you read the Pasuk in Tehillim carefully, al Yamsuf, bi al Yam, bi Yamsuf. Seems to be that there were two occasions where we tested. Malamisha Yisrael, Mamrim Ba'oso Shah. Even after we passed Kriyas Yamsuf, now I know the picture that we're about to paint right now is going to be significantly different than that we find in the Torah. In the Torah, we find after having covered, gone through Kriyas Yamsuf, Shira, song, right, celebration. I know over here we're going to be painting a slightly different picture. It's going to be a darker picture. One doesn't necessarily have to negate the other. Both could be correct. In fact, I'll say it better. Both are correct. So, ba'oso shava omrim kishem shanu olim mitzad zeh, kach mitzrayim olim mitzad achir. And they say, you know, it's true that we went through Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea. Maybe the Egyptians did as well. So, in other words, we survived, maybe they survived as well. And they're going to come after us. Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'sar shal yam plodo sol liyabasha. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the ministering angel of the sea, okay, do me a favor. The Egyptians right now are in the sea. Could you spit them out to the shore? And the sea says back, wait 1 second. You gifted me the Egyptians, and now I'm supposed to relinquish this gift? Now I know it's an animation over here that's hard for me to understand. Right? Why does the sea want to keep the Egyptians? I'm not quite ready to explain that yet because I don't understand it, but it doesn't matter. In other words, but the animation is that the sea wants to keep the Egyptians. Amalo anino sein lecha echad umechzer shebehem. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, do me a favor. Let me borrow, right? I'll give you in the future at a rate of 1.5. Right? That's pretty. Right? That's interest. That's real interest. So Amar lefanu Ribbono Shel Olam klum yesh eved shetove es rabo. So the sea says to Kadosh Baruch Hu, look, I'm your servant. You're the master. I'm going to demand the money back. That's not the way borrowing works, right? In fact. Right, you remember all the Gemaras regarding borrowing. The Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei that the borrower is the servant to the lender. And over here, the sea says, if I'm the lender, I'm not going to be demanding the money from you. So I'm alone, Nachal Kishon Ya'arev. And so Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, the Nachal Kishon, that's going to be my guarantor. Okay, so admittedly, this part of the dialogue is difficult for me to understand. It doesn't matter. The point is that the larger point is that Bnei Yisrael needed to see the Egyptians so that they knew confidently that they died. In fact, that's exactly what happens. The Jews see the Egyptians. And now we know the story behind the story in terms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu demanding / bribing the sea to spit the Egyptians out of the water. Okay, I'll mention this point briefly. It's really interesting and it deserves really a lot of attention. But I'll just mention it briefly, and that is Tosfos over here. You can see the picture in Tosfos. So someone gives a pictorial over here, and it's not just Tosfos, by the way. There are a lot of Rishonim who say the same thing as well, is that we went through Kriyas Yamsuf. The general depiction that's given is that we cut through the Yamsuf to go from one side to the other side. Tosfos says no. What we did is that we went in one side, we came out the other side. In other words, we basically went in a semicircle, and we came out the other side. Once you say that, once you look at it that way, our Gemara, it opens up our Gemara. Because what happens is that as the Jews now leave Yamsuf, they're worried about the Egyptians coming out as well. The other side. Well, if you understood that they cut through Kriyas Yamsuf and they're on one side and the Egyptians on the other side, so what? They survived. Who cares? We're on one side, they're on the other. But once you understand that they came in a semicircle, So now they are basically on the same shore, if the Egyptians in fact survived Kriyat Yamsuf. And so therefore you understand the fear that Bnei Yisrael had. So over here, Tosra says that they did not go to the other side of Yamsuf. They just walked in a semicircle. They knew they were walking in a semicircle, and they were basically on the same shore banks as where they started with. Okay, and by the way, the Rambam also agrees with Tosfos. Rambam says that he has an old tradition that this is in fact so, that they went in a semicircle and they came out on the same side. Okay. Shnayim b'mayim b'mara uv'refidim. Now, two times with water, meaning our lack of water, and we complained. Now, both of those times are found in Parshas Bishalach, once by the Mar and the other is the Refidim. Now, there is a third time where there was a complaint over water in Parshas Chukas, right, coming up, by the way, pretty soon in the Parshios. The Gemara does not make mention of that. It's interesting why the Gemara does not make mention of that. Again, not enough time to really explore, but two times in Bishalach we were in demanded water. So twice in Parshas Bishalach, there was an absence of water. We were demanding water. Okay. And both times, it wasn't just a demand of water, but we were difficult. We were quarrelsome over the water. Now two times over the man, did we rebel? How do I know that? As we now turn to the top of Tezvav Amud Beis, Al Teitzu Vayitzu, Al Tosiru Vayosiru. There were a couple of halachas regarding the man. One, don't go looking for the man on Shabbos, because it's not out there on Shabbos. Some of us did. Two, is that we were not allowed to take more than a day's worth, and on Friday, Tuesday, 2 days' worth. And some people did. So those are twice in which we rebelled with the man. Shnayim b'slav, now with the slav rishon uv'slav sheni. B'slav rishon b'shiftechem asir basar. Now in terms of the slav, in terms of the first time, Parshas B'shalach, we made a demand for slav, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us. Now I'd say the more popular, they're both popular. I mean, both of them are written in the Torah, both events are written in the Torah, but the other one, which is I guess more popular, is the one in Baloscha. That's what the Gemara here refers to as slav sheni. Now an interesting discussion amongst the rishonim. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave a slav the first time, does that mean that he gave a slav in Parshas B'shalach on a one-time occasion, or he continuously gave us? Well, if he continuously gave a slav from that point going forward, so then why were we demanding slav in Parshas Baloscha? The Rishonim discuss and debate this. You can see actually Tosfos right here discussing this issue. You can see the second Tosfos on the Amud discussing this issue. I just shed a little bit of light on it. Obviously, more to discuss. Back to the Gemara. V'asasuf asher b'kibo. Be'egel k'di'isei b'midbar parin k'di'isei. Now, as far as the Egel Azahav, the Gemara says, I don't need to elaborate. Meaning, all that's clearly related in the Torah and Parshas Kisisa. And also the Meraglim, Parshas Shlach. And the Gemara says, I don't need to elaborate. So basically, now we have enumerated the 10 times in which we tested HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Midbar. And the point now being is that with the Meraglim, so that was the most severe because it involved Lashon Hara. The Gemara now was going to be expounding how severe it is to speak Lashon Hara. We start with a pasuk in Tehillim. So Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu Lashon. Kadosh Baruch Hu says the following to the tongue. Kol eiver shel adam zekufim v'atam mutal. You know, most of the limbs of a person are zekufim. They are in a vertical plane, and you, the tongue, you're in a horizontal plane. Kol eiver shel adam mibechutz v'atam mibefnim. Now, when we're talking about the limbs and extremities of a person, so they are outside, exterior, and you, the tongue, are interior. And do you know that you are protected in two layers? One by bone, that's what we call the teeth, and the other by basar, probably a reference to the lips. Like, how many more layers of protection can I give you? And meanwhile, you, the tongue, you escape, and you say things that you shouldn't say. Right? The Kadosh Baruch Hu chastising the tongue. And by the way, you understand, it's not the tongue, it's the person using the tongue. But, okay. In other words, the Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us ample opportunity to basically keep our mouths shut. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yossi ben Zimmer, Kol HaMasapa Lashon Hara Ke'ilu Kafar Bikar. Speaking Lashon Hara is tantamount to denying the existence of God. Shenamar, the Pasuk says, Asher Amru L'Hashanen Nagbirsif Sosenu Itana Mi Adon Lanu. The pasuk in Tehillim says, "Who is a master over us?" And complementing that, I don't mean this in a complimentary way, but complementing that with the ills of speaking ill. V'amar Rav Yosef ben Zimmer kol masaper lashon hara negayim b'ayimalav. Speaking lashon hara is a prelude to getting sarash. Shenemar melashne b'seisaraehu oso atzmis. I will cut him off. Uksiv hasam l'tzmisus. Now it's a little bit of a chain over here in order to follow how we get from lashon hara to saras. So we see the pasuk in Tehillim connecting lashon hara to atzmis. Now the word tzmisus. So go to Parshas Bahar. You're going to see the word tzmisus, where when a house is sold in a walled city, it's sold indefinitely. Umetargamina lechalutin. Now if you look at Targum over there, you see the word chalutim as a definition of tzmisus. Utnan ein bein mesora muskan lemesora muchlat ela prio frima. Now the word muchlat is used in connection to tzaras. There's something called a mesora muchlat, a definitive mesora. And for that definitive mesora, there's going to be differences between him and a mitzvah muskar, only confined mitzvah, the Mishnah Megillah. But in the meantime, however, you see the word muchlat is used in connection with saras. So we go from the Pasuk of Tehillim to the Targum and Parshas Bahar to the Mishnah in Megillah. I know it's a little bit of a chain, but still, if you're following the chain, you will see how we go from Lashon Hara to saras. Amar Shlakish Maidichziv Zostia Toras HaMitzvah Zostia Taraso Shomotzi Shemra. The Gemara gives another drasha that Mitzora is actually in a contraction of the words motzi, shem, ra, regarding defamation. In the future, you know, the animals are going to go to the nachash. The omros, and they're going to have the following, so to say, argument with the nachash. So Ari Dores Vochel, you know the lion, so right, obviously a vicious animal and kills its prey, but you know what? There's a reason, because he's going to eat it. And the Ave Toreva Ochel, the same thing regarding the wolf. It's going to kill its prey, but then it's going to eat it. Atama ana yeshlacha, but you the snake, so you bite people for no reason. In other words, you just bite for the sake of biting. Omer lahem v'chim ayichon labal ashon. The snake's response is, Baal HaLashon, when you speak Lashon Hara, what benefit are you receiving? Now, I understand that we can get all psychological over here in terms of the benefit of speaking Lashon Hara, but in terms of the actual tangible benefit that you're receiving for speaking Lashon Hara, there's no benefit. And meanwhile, people do it. Now, it's not a winning argument by the snake, but basically the snake says, look, it's not unprecedented. Lashon Hara is the same thing. A person speaks Lashon Hara and does not get any benefit from it. Amar Reish Lakish. This is our last we're going to do for this morning. Kol Masaper Lashon Hara Magdil Avanos Al Shamayim. When you do Lashon Hara, your Avanos go right up to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Shenem Rashasu B'Shamayim P.M. Lushonam Te'alech Ba'aretz. That the Lashon Hara, the damages of Lashon Hara, the effects of Lashon Hara go all the way up to Shamayim. Amar Rav Chista Amar Ma'uf Kol Masaper Lashon Hara Ra'ul Sokla Be'Even. Really should be stone with stones. Ksiv Hacha Osaat Misu Ksiv Hasam Tzasuba Bor Chayev Yadu Even B. So the Gemara uses the word smisus again. Smisus we already connected with Lashon Hara and the Pasuk in Eicha describing how I was stoned, connecting with the word samsu. V'amar v'chista amar ma'ufa kol masar pa Lashon Hara amakar shbaruch hu ani, ein ani v'hu yichom lador ba'olam. Right? Like the old Western. This town isn't big enough for the two of us. Kadosh Baruch Hu says regarding me and the person speaking Lashon Hara. Shenemer melashni b'seisa re'ehu oso atzmis gavoa einayim v'rachav levav oso lo uchal. The pasuk once again in Tehillim and Perek Kuf Aleph and 101 in Tehillim. So oso lo uchal. I'll tikrei oso lo uchal ela ito lo uchal. I just can't exist with that person, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. V'ikid damasni la agasi ruch. Now some learn this not going on Lashon Hara, but in someone who exhibits arrogance. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I can't live with that person. Yeah, we'll pause over here on Merv Chista, where we're going to pick it up tomorrow, right in the middle of the Amud. So how do you-